Let's get started. I'm going to share sheets with you in a moment, but before I share it, I just want to introduce myself and say hello. I'm Lori Novick. I live here in Efrat, Israel. Unfortunately, we're having a little bit of a tough time with coronavirus right now. So it's I want to dedicate today's shir to the healing of all those who are suffering right now. From the sickness, both within the Jewish people and outside of the Jewish people, I guess in the spirit of Rosh Hashanah, which is of all of our holidays, one of the ones with the most universalist perspective. And I'm about to share the screen. What I'm going to ask you to do when I...
Shofar for women.
Just starting now?
Just 6 o'clock.
Okay, I'm muting all participants, sorry about that, but just it's going to keep us focused because there are a lot of people here. What we're going to do is also, what I've found giving these shiurim is it's often somewhat distracting in the chat for me to be, you know, if I'm trying to talk and then I'm looking at the chat, I kind of lose focus. So I think what we're going to do is I'm going to give the shiur. I'm going to ask you, feel free to write questions in the chat, but what I'm probably going to do is look at all of those questions at the end of the shiur and also leave time at that point for people to ask questions going off of the mute. And that I think is going to help facilitate us having a smooth learning experience today. I'm about to share the screen. Now, different people have different experiences with this. There is a way to set up the Zoom so that when I share the screen, you can still see me, yourself, and some other participants on the side. So I urge you to try to set it up that way because I think it's a little more lively than just kind of looking at the type page the whole time. Okay, let's see how we go. I am sharing screen. Share. Okay. People can give me like a thumbs up when they see that the screen has been shared, that would be helpful to me. Okay, we've got some thumbs up. That's helpful. I see that in my view, it's a little narrow. Hold on. I want to make sure that everyone can see the screen as well as the pictures. Okay, so what we're going to do is like this. We have a few different topics we're going to address. First of all, I want to go over some shofar blowing basics, and those shofar blowing basics are going to be very important for understanding, in particular, some of the adjustments or discussions that we're talking about these days in terms of Corona. After we talk about the basics of blowing the shofar, we're going to be talking about where women stand with respect to the mitzvah. We're going to talk about a woman potentially blowing for a man. We're going to talk about a woman blowing for herself. We're going to talk about men blowing for women, men saying who makes the bracha in that situation. And then we're going to bring all of these strands together when we're going to talk about what we're doing now in terms of Corona. Okay, so we have roughly an hour, might be a little less, might be a little more, but let's get going. And I want to start with the verse with the verses from the Torah. And then the first one from Parshas Emor, from the Melodim, V'Yedaber Hashem Moshe Lemor. God spoke to Moshe saying, Daber el b'nei Israel lemor, speak to the children of Israel saying, B'chodesh ha-shvi'i, b'echad l'chodesh, yeh lechem shabbaton zichron trua mikra kodesh, on the seventh month, which we call Tishrei, right, because the first month is Nisan, on the first of the month, that's what we call Rosh Hashanah. Interestingly, the Torah never calls Rosh Hashanah Rosh Hashanah. Yechezkel is the only one who actually talks about Rosh Hashanah Mikra, and he's referring to Yom Kippur, which is kind of interesting. Is Rosh Hashanah really a day, or is there a sense in which Rosh Hashanah is the whole season of holidays at the beginning of the year? Shabbaton Zichron Trua Mikra Kodesh. There are many different labels given here to what Rosh Hashanah is going to be, and already central to these is the role of Trua, Trua being some kind of a cry. Shabbaton, a day of rest. Zichron, remembrance. Of Trua, remembrance of the cry, Mikra Kodesh, a day of a sacred day of assembly. You won't do any labor on this day, and you're going to bring sacrifices on this day. And of course, the term that really interests us here is Zichron Trua. You'll note that it's not specified here what the blast is going to be with. What exactly the blast is. It's very ambiguous. The term Zichron is also interesting. Zichron could mean something like memory of. So for example, this year, when the first day of Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbat, we could say that in a sense, we are fulfilling the zichron part, the memory of trua part of Rosh Hashanah on the first day of Rosh Hashanah when we're not actually going to be blowing the shofar. Trua could mean a human cry and not just a cry from some sort of an instrument. Zichron trua could also mean speaking about the trua, not just thinking or remembering the trua, but somehow speaking about them. Or there could be an independent aspect of zichron, what is going to be remembered and what for. Okay, the next set of psukim, the next pasuk is from B'midbar. V'chodesh ha-shvi'i b'chad l'chodesh, mikra kodesh yelechem, kom lechet avodah lo tasu. Again, the seventh month, first day of the month, it's going to be a sacred day of assembly. Any kind of labor, lo tasu, you shall not do, yom trua yelechem. Again, we're told that there's trua. Here, what's interesting is that trua is being described as what characterizes the day. Before it was Shabbaton Zichron Trua, it was what characterized the Shabbaton. Again, whatever it is that makes Rosh Hashanah special, what Chumash is highlighting is specifically the Trua. Here the word Zichron doesn't show up. And again, nothing about a shofar is actually mentioned, right? Nothing about a shofar, nothing about how these blasts are supposed to work. So in Masechet Rosh Hashanah, we have the first kind of move to try to explain what is going on Rosh Hashanah. And this is a midrash. Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu. Amru lefanai b'Rosh Hashanah malchiyot, zichronot, v'shofarot. On Rosh Hashanah, you should say three things before me. We recognize these from the Musaf service of Rosh Hashanah. Malchiyot, which relates to God's kingship. Zichronot, there's that word zikaron again. Memory, remembrance, not clear yet, remembrance of it. Veshofarot and shofarot. Malchiyot kidei shetamlichuni aleichem. Malchiyot, we are actually, now we're given more of a sense of the content of the day. In Malchiyot, with Rosh Hashanah, we are actually coronating God. It's a moment of saying, of accepting God upon us as king. Zichronot, kidei sheyavo lefanai zichronechem letova. So the zichron, the thing that's being remembered in this context is us. We're being remembered before God. In other words, we're doing something in the course of our prayer that is going to enable God, we're going to push God, we're going to bring before God remembrance of us, specifically, you think about this from the tefillah, Zocher HaBrit, specifically the breed with us. Uvameh, and what is our tool, both for coronation, for kingship, and our tool for bringing the memory of ourselves before God, the shofar, b'meh b'shofar. The shofar is the tool through which we accomplish the messages of Malchiyot and Zichronot. Now, what's interesting is that these two messages are not the same thing, right? They may complement each other, but they're different. When you think of a coronation, you think of a party, you know, something, a huge ceremony, some sort of, I'm going to ask everyone to put themselves on mute. I'm just going to quickly mute everybody again. When you think of Malchiyot, you think of great ceremony, something that's very joyous, celebratory. Zichronot, the idea that the remembrance of us is being brought before God, which ties into our ideas of Yom HaDin, of Day of Judgment, is a lot less happy. I mean, it's happy in the sense that the one who's judging us is God. We wouldn't want anyone else to be judging us, but there's a certain tension built in. Now, what's interesting is that really when Chazal build for us, when they lay out for us the structure of how the shofar blasts have to be done or performed on Rosh Hashanah, they take each of these themes, and there are two parallel ways to learn the same tradition, which must go back to Moshe Rabbeinu, the same tradition of how we blow, related to each of these themes. What do I mean? Source number four, B'midbar. V'chi tavo milchama martachem, when we are in the wilderness and a war comes upon us, or when we get to our land and a war comes upon us, alatzar tzorer etchem, and there's an enemy who is causing us trouble, v'areotem, hareotem, that's like the word trua, right? We will make a trua sound, v'chatzotzrot, with trumpets. V'niz kartem, that also looks familiar, right? Here we have the conjunction of these two words, trua and zikaron. Hareotem, you're going to make this sound with trumpets in this case, v'nizkartem, and the memory of us is going to be brought lifnei Hashem lokechem, before the Lord your God, v'noshatem yoevechem, and you're going to be saved. And what's also interesting is that the trumpets get blown at another time, v'yom simchatchem v'moadechem roshe chodshechem, on your happy days, your appointed days, including Rosh Chodesh. And there, it's not a trua that we have, it's a utkatem. You blow a simple blast, a tkia, with the trumpets, alotechem, alzivechei shalmechem, shalmechem, over your sacrifices, vayulachem, again, lezikaron lifnei alokechem. This develops an idea that zikaron can actually have itself two sides of a coin. There's a way in which zikaron can be a very joyous moment of remembering the brit, and there's a way in which zikaron can be a very vulnerable moment of standing before God in judgment with our lives in the balance. And both of these are represented here by the din of Chatzotzrot in the Midbar. Now, of course, this isn't entirely comfortable for us because in Rosh Hashanah, we don't blow Chatzotzrot. We don't blow trumpets, right? We blow the shofar. And the answer to that question, one of the clearest ways to answer it is instead of focusing on the Chatzotzrot, where we see these themes developed, to focus on another set of psukim that develop parallel themes to the shofar. And these are the psukim that talk about Yom Kippur of the Yovel year. Source number 5. V'safarta lecha sheva shabtot shanim, sheva shanim, sheva paimim. So we're counting 7 sevens of years. We're getting to the Yovel year. V'ayu lecha yimei sheva shabtot shanim, teshav arbaim shana. 49 years altogether. Vavarta shofar trua b'chodesh hashvi'i. And you will bring across a shofar trua, right? Here we have the conjunction of the word shofar with the word trua. A trua is accomplished here through the shofar. B'chodesh hashvi'i, something else it has in common with Rosh Hashanah is that it's on the 7th month, i.e. Tishrei. In this case, we're talking about Yom Kippur. And here what's interesting is we have this repetition of ta'aviru shofar. Now what's also interesting about the word ta'aviru is that literally it can mean that you make something pass through an area, but ta'avir lahavir can also be like vayaviru kol b'machane. They caused a voice to be heard through the camp. It can also talk about the transmission of a sound. So one of the ways that we learn about the structure of the shofar blasts is focusing in on this verse, in particular because this is also a verse that talks about chodesh hashvi'i, which we could call a gzera shava. It's a form of learning one verse to another when there are words and keywords in common. And here what we have is the shofar clearly delineated as the instrument that we're using. A trua is the central thing we have to do, which makes sense. We called it zichron trua. We called it yom trua. And at the same time, this shofar trua is surrounded by, this trua is surrounded by vevarta shofar, and it's surrounded by ta'aviru shofar. There's some kind of basic sounding, if we use the parallel of vayaviru kol b'machane, that there was a voice that went through the camp, there's a basic sounding that surrounds the trua. And that's how we get our core blowing structure of tikiya, trua, tikiya. We have two plain blasts, tikiya and tikiya, which sandwich in the middle the trua. And the trua is carried out with the shofar, just like it is on Yom Kippur of the Yovel year. Okay, so we know what instrument we're using and we know the basic structure, but based on what we've just learned, we would think that the total amount of blasts of the shofar that we would need would only be 3. Of course, we do much more than 3 blasts. Well, the first things that Chazal did with this is they pointed out that there are 3 core sets of verses that they're looking at to work this out. There's the verse about Zichron Trua. There's the verse about Yom Trua, and there's the verse about Yom Kippur of the Yovel year. And basically what they say is these 3 verses, since we're learning about this law from these 3 verses in conjunction with each other, there must be at least 3 sets of these 3 blasts. So our core unit of shofar blowing is Ve'avarta shofar trua ta'aviru shofar, i.e. tikiya trua tikiya. And because we have these 3 verses we're learning it from, we're going to do that core unit 3 times. 3 times 3 equals 9. That's still quite a bit short of what we actually do. Let's start by looking at what the Shulchan Aruch has to say about this. Kama tkiyot chayav, source number 6. Kama tkiyot chayav adam nishma b'Rosh Hashanah? How many blasts does a person have to hear in Rosh Hashanah? Eisha. a total of 9. The fundamental Torah obligation, it seems like, would be to hear 9 blasts. Why? L'fish ne'emar trua b'yovel v'rosh Hashanah shalosh pamim. We have trua listed 3 times between those verses. The kol trua pshuta lefaneh pshuta l'acharah, and each trua is surrounded or sandwiched by simple blasts. Tiot u'mipi ha'shmua lamdu. And we learn from tradition shekol trua shel chodesh ha'shvi'i echad hein ben b'rosh Hashanah ben b'yom ha'kippurim shel yovel, that all the Tishrei blasts are the same, whether Rosh Hashanah or the Yovel's blasting. By the way, I forgot to mention, but it's important. Why is the Yovel significant on a thematic level and related to the blowing of Rosh Hashanah? Because the Yovel is, of course, through the blowing is when we release the slaves. It's the moment when the land reverts to the initial owner. And those are both actions that indicate that our human modes of ownership are bound temporally. They're bound by halacha. The one who ultimately has authority over property, over land, is a Kadosh Baruch Hu, because God is king. There's a sense in which that too is a coronation, a form of malchiyot. Well, here's the thing. We still have to get to what we think of as our core unit of blasts, up from 9 to 30. And that comes from source number 7, source in Gemara Rosh Hashanah. And it has to do with question about what the nature of the trua really is. The Torah did not specify how the trua sounds. And in fact, the Gemara Rosh Hashanah struggles to define it. Amar Abaye, Dichtiv Yom Trua Yelachem. It says in the Torah that it's going to be a day of trua. Targuminam, the Targum says to Aramaic, Yom Yevava Yehe Lachon. This is going to be a day of crying for you, a day of wailing for you. The translation of trua here is Yevava, crying or wailing. The nature of this blast, this makes sense in terms of thinking about the trua that we saw in Bamidbar, right? When we were crying out to God at the time of trouble with the trua. The nature of this blast is a kind of cry. The shofar, in fact, is a form of prayer. But what exactly is a blast that sounds like a cry? Well, next step. First of all, Uchtiv Mimei de Sisra, the mother of Sisra from Sefer Shoftim, in the story of Dvorah and Barak, when Sisra the general is killed by Yael, and his mother is looking out for him, waiting for him to arrive. Of course, she's not the most sympathetic character. She gets comforted by the idea that, in fact, her son is delayed, not because he's dead. He must just be raping virgins, and it's really fine, she thinks. She's not really the most ethically sound person. But what does it say about his mother? Ba'ad achilon nishkafa v'tiabiv im Sisra. Here's an example of someone crying that's related to the shofar blasts. Aim Sisra as miyabivit. We see it's really sobbing. Now, there are different ways you can cry. Mar savar gnuche ganach, mar savar yululeyalo. There are two different types of cry that we consider to be possible identities for the trua. Gnuche ganach, shvarim, yululeyalo. What we call colloquially trua. Okay? And in fact, that's how we get. If those are both possibilities, we've already got ourselves up to quite a few blasts, right? Up to 18 blasts, because we said we had a set of 3, tkia, trua, tkia. It's done 3 times. That's 9. Now we're saying there are 2 versions of the trua. There's tkia, sighing trua, that we call shvarim, tkia, and there's tkia, sobbing trua, that we call trua, actually, which is a little confusing, right? In English, you can think of it as like lowercase t, trua, sobbing trua. So there are 2 types, and that gets us to 18, but then there's one last doubt. There's a possibility that maybe it's a combination. There's a possibility that someone is making a transition when she's crying from sighing to short sobs. The Gemara doesn't consider the opposite because usually it doesn't work that way, actually, when humans cry. What's remarkable here is how closely we're connecting the sound of the shofar to a sort of proxy for like an archetypal mother crying out, which is sort of the ultimate primal human cry. And we've got now 9 plus 9. And here it's not just 9 to make 27, because remember in the middle, we've got the shvarim and the trua in combination, right? Each of those is really 4. So we have 9 plus 9 is 18, plus 12, which is 3 times 4, 18 plus 12 gets us to 30. And 30 becomes our core unit for being sure that we're fulfilling the obligation according to the Torah of hearing the Truah according to all the traditions. And we would think at that point then that we'd be done. Meaning it seemed at first glance like the core obligation from the Torah was 9. And because there are different versions of how this can be done, we brought it up to 30. And it would seem that that would be enough, and yet it's not enough. The Gemara says, I don't know why I've quoted it from here, the Torah, it's in the Gemara also, Amar of Yitzchak, Lama Tokin Marian Shen Yoshvin, V'chozrim V'tokin Marian Shen Omdin. He's taking as a given, Rabbi Yitzchak, that we blow the shofar twice. We have two full shofar services, once when we're seated, and once when we're standing. Now, of course, nowadays, when we hear the shofar, we all stand for all times. But what he means by the seated is the ones that come before the Shmoneh Esrei of Musaf, the first set of shofar blasts. That's 30. And we do it again when we're standing, by which he means when we're in the midst of Tfilat Shmoneh Esrei, the Amida. That's also 30. So actually, we started with 9. Because of the different possibilities for Truah, we moved it up till 30. And now, astonishingly, we've said actually that the base is 60. We do this whole thing twice. Why do we do it twice? Asked Rav Yitzchak. Kedei larbev ha-satan. What that means, no one is sure. Larbev means to mix up or to confound. Hasatan is some kind of divine prosecutor. My favorite explanation of this is from the Rosh, Rabbeinu Asher, who said that what it means is that when the divine prosecutor sees how much we love the mitzvot, that we're doing them more than just once, and we're seeking to blow the shofar, it's much harder for him to build a real case against us. Okay, but there are a lot of different ways to understand it. But basically, this is what we have. We have 30 blasts that we sound twice, in theory. The only thing is that, in fact, we jump from 30 to 60 to 100. How do we do that? Because what we have is the blowing before the Shmoneh Esrei. And now here's a divergence between Sephardi shuls often and Hasidic shuls and Ashkenazi shuls. Okay, often in Hasidic shuls and in Sephardi shuls during the silent Shmoneh Esrei, you have another set of 30. Then in the repetition, there's another set of 30. And then at the end, there's 10 or 11 to polish it off to 100 or 101. In Ashkenazi shuls, it's the first set of 30 before Musaf, the 30 in the repetition of the Shmoneh Esrei, and then they also want to bring it up to 100, 101, and they do all that at the end of davening. It's a really curious thing that we got from 9 to 30, but it's much more curious to think how we got from 30 to 60 and from 60 all the way to 100. And it's not clear why this should be. One reason, which is given in the Tosfot, I didn't bring in the source sheet, is that actually maybe it has to do with Emes Yisra. The Aruch, a Gaonic source that Tosfot quotes, says that Emes Yisra cried 100 times. She cried 100 times, and perhaps we're counteracting her 100 cries. Perhaps we're channeling her 100 cries. Rav Soloveitchik says that her 100 cries were coming from her whole world being shattered before her. She didn't know what happened to her son. In this universalist holiday of Rosh Hashanah, maybe we can connect to what that means, even for a woman who's not one of us and whose values are very different from us. And this idea that our preconceptions coming into hearing shofar have been shattered, we're doing something else. In any case, 100. Another source for 100, which is really interesting in particular for women also, is that there's a midrash I brought here, source 10. There's an idea that when a woman gives birth, she cries 99 times, and it's the last cry that's the cry for life, that 100th cry. We need to get to 100 because it's the 100th that we're actually secured life, which is beautiful. What's interesting, if you've noticed it, is these themes, Emes Yisra and the crying of the woman, are connecting the shofar's voice, not just to a voice of prayer or cries, but to a woman's prayer or cry, which is perhaps one of the reasons that motivates women to be so engaged in the mitzvah of shofar. So now let's move on and let's talk about some of the halachic issues about what this means in practice. What we just saw, though, is going to be very relevant in the time of Corona, because if we're going to have to cut down the timing of our services, or if we think of shofar blowing in and of itself as dangerous, then we want to know what's the essential unit of shofar, like what's the amount, the minimum amount of blast that we can sound without losing our mitzvah. Okay, what about women? So source 11, Tana Rabbanan, Ezui mitzvah teseshes man grama, sukkah, lulav, and shofar. Okay, classic, positive, time-bound commandment example is shofar. Generally speaking, we say women are exempt from time-bound commandments. Looks like really game over, we should be done. And yet that's not the case. Sources, and we'll see some later, sources as early as the 11th century are talking about women making an effort to, hear a shofar, that's quite a remarkable thing to even think about. Rashi's teachers already discussing it. There's something that happens over 1,000 years ago. There's something that happens that shifts the relationship of women in shofar, and it becomes clear that this is something that women are doing. To what extent? Look at what the Maharil says, source 12. What I've done throughout in the source sheet is given you the dates of birth and death for the sage that wrote the book, as opposed to giving you the time of the book's publication, just to give you a sense of the era that we're talking about. Okay, so what does the Maharil say? Achen, nashim p'turot, demitzvat aseh d'zman gramahu. Sure, yeah, women are exempt. It's positive time-bound commitment. Ach machnisin et atzman l'chiyuv. But they bring themselves into the obligation. It's a really interesting formulation. What does it mean to bring yourself into an obligation of a mitzvah, right? Either you're obligated, generally speaking, God commanded you, or he didn't. He says, we're in the obligation. And since women have brought themselves into the obligation, well, the first part makes sense. Once women take this as a binding custom, it's sufficiently important that women should make every effort not to delay hearing shofar. But the end is really remarkable. He doesn't say so that they won't be late for hearing shofar. He says the reason that women have to plan in advance is al yatrichu et hatzibur lehamtin achareihem. The women should not force the congregation to wait for them. This is extraordinary. Maharil is saying that by his point in time, okay, he's here, he's in the 14th century, and it's 14th to 15th century, and he's saying that already by his time, the custom, the binding custom of women to hear shofar on Rosh Hashanah is so deeply entrenched and is viewed as so communally important that if women were to delay coming to synagogue, it might delay the blowing of the shofar. It would be a tircha to the tzibur because the tzibur is waiting for the women. The women's presence matters. I want you even just to think about this in today's terms. It's an amazing thing. Women are taking on a mitzvah observance voluntarily. And it's not just that women here are receiving rabbinic support. This is across the board in the community, this voluntary action of the women is so supported that it's taken for granted that the women are going to be in shul and that that's going to affect how the shul is run. A lot of times people don't feel necessarily that that is something that can happen in the world of halakha, and it's something that we see is happening hundreds and hundreds of years ago, and we take it for granted. We don't even recognize it. He continues and he says some really interesting things. We're not going to read it all inside just because I want to have time to talk about all of the issues that I've prepared to discuss with you, but he says things about preparing your food in advance so you don't have to cook during the holiday. He talks about Hanashim Vehabtulot. It's women of all ages who are expected to come to the shul. He also urges the women to come to shul from the beginning to the end of the davening. It's not just that they're coming for shofar, He wants them to hear, he wants them to be there for the whole Yamim Noraim experience. This is a priority from the Maharil's perspective. And then he actually gets into an interesting discussion of how it's supposed to work with kids. I don't know how, where these kids were supposed to go, but he seems to think that there's some arrangement the women could be able to make so that they would not be troubled by their kids during shofar, and so the kids would not disrupt the shofar blowing. The idea being that the women are priority, and then he talks about how the men shouldn't bring the kids into the men's section because the men have a Torah level obligation. Sometimes a woman's going to have to bring her kid to shul. There's not going to be a choice. So it's not just that he's thinking in this like broad communal level. He's actually thinking in a very practical, relatable level about how can I, as a rabbi, help facilitate and foster women's observance of this mitzvah that women have taken on, down to the details of what are you going to do with your kids when? Okay, this is how much he's thinking it through. And it's all coming from a very deep assumption, clearly, that this is praiseworthy and this is important. A side note, which is also often very relevant for women with shofar, which is just that it's customary that we don't speak in between the bracha recited for shofar before the musaf blowing till the very end, the blowing at the end of services. That's customary. Sometimes it can't be helped. If someone has to leave shul for whatever purpose, that's not an issue. It's a stringency. It's not even exactly clear why we do it. It goes back to Gaonic times. There's really a sort of halachic debate, which also comes into play right now during Corona, still hasn't really been fully resolved about which of the sets of 30 blasts is the essential one. The one before the Musaf services or the one during. It's not crystal clear which is the essential one. The first one gets the bracha of Lishma Kol Shofar. The second one gets to be in conjunction with Malchiyot Zichronon and Shofar, which as we saw are the message of the Shofar. So they both have real importance. It's not clear which, but something that's important just to know, because it can be very practical for men too, is that if you're not allowed to speak while the blast is being sounded, but if you have to speak in between the blasts about things related to the shofar blowing, you can, which means something like, for example, if you have to tell a young person near you, whether it's yours or someone else's, please be quiet during the shofar. That's an okay kind of speech over the course of the shofar blowing service because it's related to the inyan of the shofar. Another short halachic note is also it's customary not to eat prior to hearing the shofar, but because in this case, women don't have a Torah level obligation in hearing shofar, but rather we've obligated ourselves as a matter of binding custom. For that reason, it is permissible for a woman who otherwise would be weak or sick or have trouble functioning to eat before hearing the shofar bless. Okay, which is can be justified with men, but can be a little harder to justify with men. Okay, let's talk about some of the practical ramifications of who's blowing for whom. Now, let me ask you, could a woman blow shofar for a man? Now, in practice, you're probably immediately saying no. And yeah, the halachic answer is going to be no. I just want to point out that the fact that that's the answer is not obvious. And the reason it's not obvious ties into another essential element of what it means for the shofar to be blown. What is the mitzvah of blowing shofar? Is it really a mitzvah to blow shofar? So look at source number 18. And they asked a question. I asked a question of the Rambam about shofar blowing. And Rambam responds, She'ilu hayta mitzvah mechuyevet yatkiya. If the mitzvah of shofar were actually blowing it, haya chayav kol adam v'adam min hascharim litkoa. All the men would have to blow for themselves the shofar. K'mo shechayav kol adam v'adam leshev b'sukkah v'tol lulav. The same way every man has to shake his own lulav and sit in the sukkah for oneself. If the idea of shofar was a masa mitzvah of blowing, then every individual would have to do that for himself. It can't be. Ela mitzvah hi hashmia. Rather, the mitzvah is hearing the shofar. The lo atkia, the enanu tokin, ela kedei lishma. The reason we blow is just because if no one blows, there's nothing to hear. But from the Rambam's perspective, the essence of the mitzvah is hearing the shofar. If that's the case, it's actually a little less obvious than we might have thought at first, that we would be limited in who could blow shofar, right? If the mitzvah is just that you hear the shofar blown, does it really matter? Ordinarily, we have a rule that someone has to be obligated on the same or a higher level as someone else in order to discharge the mitzvah obligation. But in the case of shofar, if really what we're trying to do is just hear the shofar blast and the act of blowing is just a means to that end, then why really can't a woman blow shofar for a man? Well, first it bears noting that not everyone agrees that that's the sole way to define the mitzvah. Source 20 comes from the Rush. He's talking in the name of Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam Katav, Shiesh Levarech Al Tkiat Shofar, Mishum Dasiyata Igmar Mitzvata. He says that the bracha, we make the bracha of Lishma Kol Shofar. What does he say we should say? Al Tkiat Shofar. Rabbeinu Tam actually suggested that the bracha that one should make on the shofar blowing would be focused on blowing and not on hearing. There's no way that he would have suggested that that be the bracha if he thought that the mitzvah was exclusively a mitzvah of hearing. If the mitzvah is only one of hearing, you wouldn't say, Asher Kedshan Mitzvah Tavit Sivan, who sanctified us in his commandment and commanded us to blow shofar. You wouldn't say that, or on the blowing of the shofar. You wouldn't say that if the mitzvah were entirely hearing. So we have a debate about the nature of the mitzvah. If the nature of the mitzvah is some kind of combination of blowing and hearing, it can't be the Rabbeinu Tam thinks it's just blowing. There's just too much Talmudic evidence of talking about the significance of hearing for that to be plausible. So it's got to be that the two positions are either it's just hearing, which seems to be the Rambam's position, or it's a combination of hearing and blowing, which seems to be Rabbeinu Tam. If you say like Rabbeinu Tam, then it's very clear why a woman can't blow for a man. If we're saying that that the tekiah, that the blowing is part of the mitzvah itself, then also who does the blowing is going to matter. And then we get back into our classic framework of you need to have an equal or higher obligation to discharge someone else's obligation. Fine. But if we say like Rambam, that the mitzvah is just hearing, then we're going to have to find some way to define why it would be that a woman couldn't blow for a man. And there are a few different ways to try to formulate what this would mean. In the interest of time, I'm going to skip ahead to source 24, which is Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, a great Rav of Yerushalayim in the early 20th century. And how he defined it. Tnae ha-mitzvah hi shekol ha-shofar yetzei al yedei tkiat bar chiyuva v'lo yeh mitasek v'kol shel mitasek odolav bar chiyuva lav shmea kol shofar shel mitzvah hu v'kol zek v'kol kazeh pasul. What's he saying? He's saying this actually part of how the mitzvah is constructed, even if we say that the mitzvah is hearing, it's got to be hearing the shofar blown by someone who is obligated. Somehow that is part of the halachic definition of the sound of the shofar. In other words, he's saying the sound of the shofar is not just that the shofar instrument is sounding a specific set of notes over a specific set of time, that pattern of sounds that we call tkia, trua tkia. He's saying part of the essence of the halachic definition of that sound to be considered a kol shofar of mitzvah is that it be sounded by what we call a bar chiyuva, by someone who is obligated. Now, for that reason, a man needs to blow for another man. What's interesting here is that by that same token, there's not a lot of people who said that, but if you look quickly at source number 33, there is a viewpoint that a woman should specifically hear shofar from a man, and it's because if you look in the middle here, imay shahi atokat betzma in kan kol chiyuv ha'amur b'torah klal. Okay, he's making a similar logic. He's talking specifically about brachot. We'll get to that, but he's basically saying that a woman who wants to fulfill her binding obligation should ideally hear the ultimate obligatory style shofar blast, which is be something if that is sounded by a man. Okay. I see that there are questions. I'm going to have to answer them in the end. Very quickly, we're going to see that this is a custom that really spread, and let's look at how it worked. Okay, most of the sources we're going to see are coming from medieval Ashkenaz, okay, from the Ashkenazi lands of Europe. Okay, source 26. Utkiot shofar reshut. Uvreshutam levarech al mitzvah. Umistavra ein acher tokea lahem. Elahen be'atzman tokinu mitaskim behem shilmedu. Bala iter. Provençal Ashkenazi Rishon from the 12th century is telling us women can blow shofar. It's something women can do. It's permissible. There's a mitzvah fulfillment perhaps when we do it, and even can make a bracha over it. And then he says, Mistabra. It makes sense that Ein Acher Tokeh Lahem Elahem Be'atzman Tokin. Women blow shofar for themselves. He takes it as a given. It's so funny because I think if you heard about women blowing for themselves, sometimes it might come off as something, I don't know, radically feminist. I don't know. But here we see that this is well predating feminism. The natural assumption was when women started blowing shofar, this is also before Maril, who assumed that women were going to get to shul, was that women, sure, a woman who wants to fulfill this mitzvah can blow the shofar for herself. Ravia, you see this backed up in source after source from medieval Ashkenaz. Ravia, 12th to 13th century. Sharein Nashim tok ot le'atzman im yirtzu. Women blow the shofar for themselves if they want. Hagot maimoniot. Okay, 13th century. The Kakatav Rabbeinu Simcha. He's talking about Rav Simcha of Speyer, who's known for a series, actually, of rulings that permit women to do a range of things that other chachamim didn't always. Gabet kiat shofar, sha'isha tokat latzma yesh levarech, bein mochim biyada. A woman who blows shofar for herself makes a bracha and you don't protest. He's already talking about brachas. He takes it for granted. A woman blows for herself. 29, the tour. Afo pisha nashim muktanim pturin. Even though a woman and a minor are exempt, a woman can blow shofar and make the bracha. The simple reading of this is that a woman can blow for herself. Now, he points something out, and this is important. The ein kan mishum isur tkiya biyom tov velo mishum bracha levatela. There are two objections that we already could have seen to someone doing this. One could be blowing the shofar itself on yantiv. Blowing a shofar on Yantav outside of the strict mitzvah context is called an uvdin dechol. It's the kind of thing you do in a work day. It's not the kind of thing that you do on Yom Tov. It's not, strictly speaking, a malacha. And at the same time, it's not something that one does freely for fun. And here what you have is the possibility. It's almost like the objection is raised, but it's deflected by the Torah. The possibility that, maybe a woman should not be able to blow. Because maybe it's an uvdin d'chol, it's not really a mitzvah. But he says, no, she can blow. And also, maybe a woman shouldn't be able to make a bracha. But it seems that no, there's room also to make a bracha, the Urim. Hein yitika'u la'atzman de'kivan de'en b'tkia isura d'oraita. Melechat avodah lo tasu. Yatzu tkiat shofar adiyat tapad shi chokhma b'ena malacha. It's called a skill. It's not a malacha. It's not a full-fledged isura d'oraita to blow shofar outside of the mitzvah context on Yantiv. Hilkach, mishum nachat ruach de nashim betinokot sharinam lehu ad shil medu. In order to give women a sense of spiritual gratification, it's completely permissible for women to blow. Again, the assumption being a woman's blowing for herself. Shulchan Aruch, afa pi shenashim p'turot yicholot litkoa. Even though women are exempt, they can. He doesn't say they can hear the shofar. He says they can blow the shofar. Now the Shulchan Aruch here says that a woman shouldn't blow, and this is his, shouldn't make a bracha, and this is his general psak halacha when it comes to women voluntarily taking on mitzvot tzeishes magrama, that when a woman does it, she can perform the act but shouldn't recite a bracha, presumably lest it be a bracha levatela. But it's interesting to note that here too the Rama takes his usual position. The minhag shenashim mevarchot al mitzvot tzeishes magrama, alken gam kan mevarchot letzman. Women make the bracha for themselves, just like other mitzvot that a woman takes on. Okay, so if a woman, generally speaking, makes bracha to mitzvah taseh shezman grama, the shofar is nothing different. This becomes very relevant in the following case. A woman comes late to shul. She missed the first set of tkiyas. They made the bracha before the first set, but she got there for musaf, and she's going to hear the full set from Musaf. They're not making the bracha again. Okay? So there's a possibility that she can make a bracha for herself. Or if she's hearing the last set at the end of davening, the last 30, there it's even easier because it's not necessarily, coming up in the middle of prayer, right? She can make the bracha because she's making a bracha on hearing the shofar. And that's something a woman can do for herself when she fulfills a mitzvah voluntarily. Okay. Now, there are a few dissenters to this opinion. Like the Bach thinks it's probably better not to do it, but he admits, it's already the custom, women blow and women bless. So we had apparently locales where it was common for women to come to shul and hear the shofar. And perhaps even in the same locales, it wasn't always easy for a woman to come to shul. Or perhaps sometimes there wasn't a facility for a woman to come to shul. So it was also very prevalent, very much it seems in medieval Ashkenaz, that women were blowing shofar for themselves and not just making an effort to hear shofar. And the women were reciting the bracha alongside it if they were reciting brachot on other things. And we also see that this extended outside of Ashkenaz because the Shulchan Aruch, the Machaber of Yosef Karo is in Turkey, is testifying to the fact that women are blowing shofar, okay, that women can blow for themselves. Now, here's an interesting question as well. We talked a little bit about why in the end we say that women can't blow shofar for men. Why should a man be able to blow shofar for a woman? Now, ordinarily, we say that one person can discharge another's mitzvah obligation. It's what we call arevut. Kol Yisrael arevin zeh vazeh. There's a specific application of that that is called yatsa motzi. A person has already discharged their obligation. They're still able to fulfill a mitzvah for another person because it's all of Israel looking out for each other to be able to fulfill mitzvot. Now, that would work really nicely here if women had a Torah level obligation to hear the shofar. Can we really say yatsa motzi? Then a man who already discharged his shofar blowing obligation can, let's say, blow shofar special for women in a case where women don't have an obligation on a Torah level. This becomes actually a really good test case for how seriously we take the kind of binding force of custom by which women hear shofar. So here we have the Ravun in the 12th century. And he's talking about Isha ve'eved cher shetev katan ein chayvim tkiyat shofar. She's exempt. The im tokim be'atzman ein mochim bi'adam. It's fine if a woman wants to blow for herself, as we explained earlier. Okay, and he discusses that a bit. The temali, and this is a question for him. Amay nagua rishonim litkoa liyoldot ulcholeh. This is also really interesting. Apparently, a woman, a classic case in which someone would go out of their way to blow shofar for a woman would be for a yoledet, a woman after childbirth. A woman right after childbirth is not going to have an easy time making it. Now, what's really interesting about this is that a woman after childbirth is not going to have an easy time making it to shul. Again, she's still not obligated on a Torah level, right? And ordinarily, we say that we don't blow the shofar when it's not necessary. It's an uvdin dechol. And yet, the custom, and this astonishes the Ravan, the custom, and he says it's been a custom for generation, nagua rishonim. He's talking in the 12th century. He's talking about earlier than that. How is it that really we would blow for the yoledet? V'nirali, dehachi nagu, shatoke yitkaven lotzi atzmo, uvchachi tiru. So he says, well, it's got to be. He thinks it's got to be that he hasn't blown for himself yet. So he thinks that the way it would work is that a Baal Tokea, a guy who's blowing shofar for a woman special, should be sure not to discharge his obligation yet. And that way he can blow for the woman because he's not just blowing for the woman. He's also blowing for himself. He thinks that the idea of yatsa motzi, the idea of someone who's already fulfilled their obligation, discharging someone else's, is a bridge too far when we're not talking about a classic direct Torah obligation, but women being machnisot tatzman l'chiyuv, entering themselves into obligation. Okay. And he thinks that's okay. But you know, what's amazing is there's another opinion that's more lenient, and we see it in the Ravya. And the Ravya is going to bring up another issue as well that we haven't even spoken about yet. And this last issue is carrying. On Yantav, we don't really think that much about the prohibition of carrying, but even on Yantav, you're not, ideally, you're really not supposed to be carrying things around, at least not in Rashut HaRabim, in the public domain, that are not necessary for the day. You're not supposed to just spontaneously be carrying things around. It's supposed to be that if you're carrying things around by Yantav, ideally they're things that you need for Yantav, Letzorach Yantav. Now look at what the Rav Yah says, source 36. Hu adin shetokim lahim. Yeah, we blow for women. Shehi chochma ve'ena malacha d'oraita. Number one, we're not so worried about it being uvdin d'chol. Bottom line, it's a skill. It's not a full-fledged malacha. For this purpose, it's okay. V'tokim lahen afilu im yatsa kvar. This is really amazing. Even if the man has already discharged his obligation, this is still a case where we say that he can blow special for a woman, even though it's not a classic type of obligation that he's discharging for the woman. Why? Kevan she'ika mitzvah. Harei nashim tokot le'atzman im yirtzu. Kedemrin en perek batra. Mutar nami lotzi bishvilan ha-shofar l'shut ha-rabim. Not only can you blow for them, but also you can take the shofar out too. Rashut ha-rabim, it's considered tzorech yantiv to bring a shofar to where a woman would be able to hear it if she's not going to be able to otherwise hear a shofar. The bottom line, what is he saying? Ika mitzvah. Even though we're not talking here about a mitzvah as we might classically define it of shofar, it's not the Torah level obligation to hear the shofar blowing. From the Ravia's perspective, a woman's binding custom to hear shofar over the generations has enough of a mitzvah status, both to mean we're not worried, in all three levels, we're not worried about uvdin d'chol, we're not worried about yatsa motzi, and we're not worried about taking the shofar into the Rashut HaRabim. What he's saying is really we are entirely, altogether committed to making sure that women hear the shofar blast. Now you can already imagine, I think, how this is going to be relevant to Corona discussion in terms of how we weigh or assess the significance of making sure that a woman could hear shofar. And the Torah is going to bring the Ravia's opinion. He says at the end in source 37, Avia Katav, Shafilu achar shiatsa yacholit ko alahem ulotzia shafar bishvilam afilu derek rishut haramim v'lazei skim adunia vi. He brings it and he says, this is my father, the Rosh. He says it also. This becomes halacha. Shulchan Aruch paskens it. V'chein achar shiatsa kvar yacholit ko alotzian. A man can blow shofar for women, even if he's already discharged his obligation. Now you should know that there's still some people who will say that it's preferable for a man not to blow shofar for women if he's already discharged his obligation. There's still people who will prefer it that way, but it is permissible even if the man already discharged his obligation. But just to give you a sense, we really do care about blowing shofar. Once that's done, you don't just keep blowing. Okay. Umvarchen, the blessing. So now we've said that. And don't worry, I see that there are questions. I'm going to finish our shiur and then we'll get to all the questions, Bezrat Hashem. Okay, we've seen that a woman can blow for herself and bless for herself. And we've seen that a man can blow for a woman, even if there are various halachic hurdles to clear. A man can blow for a woman to make sure that she can hear shofar. What about making the bracha? Source 40, Moshe Vzkenim, he says, this is the Balei HaTosfot on the Torah. Afo gav denashim mefatri. Miftari, b'tkiyat shofar, henshin higu al atzman v'kiblu ha-mitzvah lehem. Women have taken this mitzvah upon themselves, even though they're exempt. Perush, the explanation is, detokin l'nashim levadam. We do blow a shofar just for women if necessary. Umvarchim lehen, and we even make the bracha for women as necessary. Kach piresh Rabbi Yitzchak ben Yehuda, demutar l'tkol l'nashim ovarech. Rabbi Yitzchak ben Yehuda said, you can blow for women and you can bless for women. And Rabbi Yitzchak ben Yehuda is not a minor person. This is a student of Rabbeinu Gershom Miragola. This is one of Rashi's teachers. And this is going way, way back in history. We are talking here about a minhag that's 1,000 or so years old. And when we're talking about 1,000 or so years old, we're not just talking about it getting started to women sometimes hear shofar. We're talking about this being something widespread that is taken with great halachic seriousness is over 1,000 years old. It starts in Ashkenaz and it spreads to Sephardi lands. Okay. The Beit Yosef, disagrees. He says that you can blow, but he says, Umihu tov shelo levarech. It's better not to make the bracha. It's better not to make the bracha in this case. And of course, he doesn't want the woman reciting the bracha for herself. Lahalacha, what do we say? Shulchan Aruch. Afal pi shenashim p'turot yicholot likoa. So when we saw this already, women can blow for themselves. V'chein acher sheyatza kvar, and someone who's already discharged the obligation, yichol litkoa lotzia, can blow for them. Aval ein mevarchot v'lo yivarchu lahen. Shulchan Aruch, this is his shita. No brachas on women's voluntary mitzvah observance. Ramah. Women make brachas for them for their voluntary obligations. Okay, gam kan mevarchot latzman. Voluntary mitzvah fulfillment. Woman makes bracha. Aval, acherim lo yivarchu lahen. In kfar yatzu, ve'en tok in rak l'nashim. If a man has already discharged his obligation in shofar, and he's blowing just for women, then he should not make the bracha, says the Ramah. In that case, the bracha is really being made over the voluntary mitzvah fulfillment, and a woman should make it. So that means that if there's a shofar blowing just for women, and the person who's blowing the shofar has not yet fulfilled his obligation, then in that case, he can make the bracha, no problem. If he has fulfilled his obligation, and there's another man there who hasn't, or maybe even a minor who hasn't, there could be room for him to make the bracha. But if it's just women there, then a woman, women can make the bracha. And here's the thing, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach rules that one woman can make the bracha for the entire group in that situation. So if a man is already discharged his obligation, is blowing for women, a woman can make for the entire group. And I would add, if a woman is blowing for women, which as we've learned is not a radical departure from halachic history, but is in fact something that goes back as early as this custom, right? If a woman is blowing for other women, then she can make the bracha for other women. Okay, according to Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, there's no problem with that. Okay, and let's summarize what we've had so far, and let's move it into very practical things this year of Corona, and then I'm going to look at your questions. Okay, summarizing what we've seen so far. We started by talking about the nature of the shofar blast and how the core group went from 9 to 30 to 60 to 100, right? And the question in terms of Corona is going to be, how many of these do we really need to hear? Point number two, we talked about women and shofar. Women are exempt from hearing the shofar. So you might think, especially in a time, let's say like Corona, that that would mean, okay, game over, done. It's not not technically obligatory on a Torah level. It's not the most important thing. But actually what we discovered as we looked closer and particularly at the rulings about a man blowing for a woman, and the fact that he can blow for women, notwithstanding the question of Uvdin Dechola, notwithstanding the fact that maybe he's bringing the shofar through Rishut Arabim, and notwithstanding the fact that maybe he's already discharged his obligation, that we take this mitzvah very seriously. We saw the Ma'aril talking about women having to make, saying communally, let's make sure that women get to shul on time so we're not delayed. It's so important for this to happen. And we've also seen that women can blow the shofar for themselves. So how does this all pan out with Corona? What are we doing with Corona? There's one other little piece that we have to look at. I'm sorry, I'm going a little over time here. I hope people don't mind terribly. The one last piece before we really get into the Corona thing is the Mishnah and Rosh Hashanah I have here. Hatokeh l'tocha bor l'tocha dut o l'tocha pitam. This is a case where a person is blowing shofar in a pit or in a cistern or in a jug. Now, for years I taught this Mishnah, and it just seemed so totally remote from people's experience. Why would someone blow shofar in a pit or in a cistern in a jug, like in some kind of container? Unfortunately, over the course of Jewish history in particular, there have been times of prosecution where it wasn't always safe to blow the shofar freely. And there would be contexts where the person who's blowing the shofar would have to be in some sense concealed or separated slightly and spatially from other people. It's oddly resonant right now in terms of Corona, where on the one hand, no one's going to be inside a jug or a cistern, but that sense that there might be some other enclosure in which the shofar blower is going to have to be in order for other people to fulfill their mitzvah because of the unique historical exigencies that we're in right now is very powerful. You know, it's right here. So there can be a situation where you're not 100% in the same shared space as the person who's blowing the shofar. Okay? Im kol shofar shema yetza, vim kol havara shema lo yetza. If what people hear, notwithstanding that it's not 100% the same enclosure, is the unadulterated voice of the shofar itself, that's okay. That works. You've discharged your shofar obligation. But if what's heard is just a kol havara, a sort of an echo, and not the full-fledged sound of the shofar, that doesn't work. We have to hear the unadulterated voice of the shofar. We'll come back to this. V'chein, so too. Misha ya overa chore beta knesset. What if someone is not actually in the shul? They're in behind the shul. Can you discharge your shofar obligation if you're not inside shul? Again, this is something that is much more palpable this year than it normally is. Oshaya beto samuch lebeta knesset. What if your home is adjacent to somewhere where they're blowing? Veshama kol shofar, and you heard the shofar. It could also be with the Megillah. It depends on im kiven libo yatsa, im lav lo yatsa. As long as there's appropriate intentionality, it's okay. And what we learn later in the Gemara when it discusses this, it discusses the idea that it's the person hearing should have intention, and the person blowing is presumed to have intention, and we say that Baal Tokeh should do this on purpose, is presumed to have intention to discharge the obligation of anyone who might hear that blast. A Baal Tokeh is supposed to have in mind that anyone who could possibly hear would be able to discharge the obligation. Okay, let's talk about Corona. I brought here a range of different poskim talking about what this means for today. We'll start, Rav Rimon is a start, and he's concerned, and what one of the things we're concerned about with shofar, so we have a few problems. Number one, people congregating in a space. Number two, even outdoors, right? On the one hand, the acoustics aren't necessarily as good. We're not going to be as close. It might be harder to hear the shofar. On the other hand, even outdoors, unfortunately, we're particularly concerned about aerosol spread, and the shofar in effect is spreading particles, you know, potentially of spittle from the blower all through, you know, in range of that shofar in the immediate area, which is where you more or less want to be because you want to hear the shofar. That's a concern. So, additionally, we don't want to spend more time than is necessary, unfortunately, in each other's company. So Rav Yosef Tzvi Rimon was asked about what to do here. He quotes the Mishnah as we've seen above. And basically what he says is, look, ideally, you create some kind of a nylon plastic partition in front of the people, in front of the shofar blower, so that the spittle can't go forward, but the sound is not affected. But if people are really concerned, he says, if you need to, you can put a mask on the front of the shofar in order that aerosol particles not emerge from the shofar along with the sound. And the condition for doing that gets back to the kol shofar, kol havar. It has to be the proper sound of the shofar is heard, because the mitzvah is that we hear a real sound of shofar. Okay, now something that's interesting here is that he doesn't say anything in this particular tshuva about women. So too, just scrolling down, we have similar things. Rav Zilberstein talks about it. He says, nope, can't put a mask in front of a shofar, just use distance. But then he also says, nope, you can't have fewer than 100 shofar blasts. No flexibility. Rav Mendel Shafran, also a Haredi Rav, says, you know what? If you need to, you can put a mask on the front of the shofar as long as it's done carefully and doesn't go in. Additionally, if necessary, to end it quickly, you can do 30 as opposed to 60 as opposed to 100. If we've got to do 30 in order to keep people safe, then we go back to the original 30. Rav Schachter also, he says we can go down to doing fewer blasts, though it's interesting. He says we have to do at least 60 shofar blasts without the final 40 at the end of Musaf. He also says that if it's necessary, then there, he says ideally there should be distance between the OU, RCA, talk about also that if someone's sick or they need to hear it, you could have the shofar be outside an open window or door to give people a wider range of where they could hear it. But ideally, there shouldn't be anything between the person who's blowing the shofar and the shofar that's called a chatzitza, but you could have a mask in front. Now, what I'm most interested in here of all of these is Rav Yitzchak Yosef. And the reason why I'm interested in him is because of all of the poskim that I've seen who've talked about Koron and shofar in particular, he's the only one, to my knowledge, who's singled out the case of women and discussed it a little bit. He also says, okay, there can be room to put a surgical mask on top. Okay, there can be room to minimize the amount of blast that we have to hear. But what does this mean for women? Here's what he says. And then I want to think about it, putting all of our pieces together. And then I'll look at your questions. We'll finish up. Nashim. Hanoagot b'chol shana la'gil l'batei ha'kneset l'tfilot ha'yamim ha'noraim. Einan chayavot l'vo l'beit ha'kneset. Ve'enan tzrichot ha'tar al-kach. First thing, he says, look, even if you come every year, if this is a year that for whatever reason related to corona, you can't come, it's okay. He says it specifically to women, which is interesting. He says, it's okay, and you don't need to have a hatarat nedarin to justify it. That was actually a rule of his father, Rav Avadya Yosef. The Ben Ish Chai ruled that a woman who always hears shofar every year, if she has to miss a given year, must make a hatarat nedarin. Rav Avadya Yosef ruled that for a given year, a woman can't make it to shul for whatever reason. There's no need for hatarat nedarin. That was point number one. Point number two. Mikivan she'anashim einan chayavot betkiot. Im ein makom bevet haKnesset, yesh efsharut likboa tkiot miuchadot lenashim achar tzoraim. He says, look, women don't have to come. If for whatever reason there's not going to be space in the shul, we can make special shofar blowings for women. That's the ruling that we usually have. Okay, let's put all the pieces together. And the first thing I want to point out is that these other rabbinic authorities didn't mention the women. And Rav Yitzchak Yosef did. Now, Rav Yitzchak Yosef mentions women as being a special case, and he does it in a very intelligent way. He says, look, if we've got limited space in shul, or if we've got women who, for whatever reason, can't make it to shul, this is not the end of the world. We can find other ways for the women to hear shofar, and for some reason they can't, there's hatarat nedarim. We can recognize that fundamentally there's a different din, and at the same time, we can go out of our way to make sure that we're blowing shofar for women as safely as we can. And at the same time, these other poskim from Rav Schachter, the OU, now it might be that they'll come out with a statement, Rav Shachman, Rav Zilberstein, these other poskim, Rav Rimon, maybe they'll come out with a statement eventually. I don't know if they will. None of them mention women uniquely. And I actually think that's very telling. Because what I think is going on, I think the reason they're not mentioning women here as a unique case is because really this process that we saw of women's taking on this mitzvah being completely embraced and supported by the entire world of halachic authority to the point where it overcomes what could be real halachic objections to this practice at a very early stage has been so deeply and well absorbed. The connection of women to shofar going back to Aim Sisra, going back to the woman giving birth. In fact, there's also a whole world of Kabbalah about women and the sounds of the shofar. That connection is so profoundly ingrained in our Yamim Noraim experiences that at this stage, people are not saying something about women don't have to hear it as opposed to men, which is really quite remarkable. To the extent that we're seeing women mentioned uniquely, it's being mentioned uniquely as, yes, you can make a special blowing for women either and under the circumstances, you need to do it safely. And if that's going to happen, it's generally going to be drowned in safety. But generally speaking, the viewpoint here is that even though women are not obligated in a Torah level, in a sense, we're on the same boat. So on the one hand, if a woman, for whatever reason this year, related to concerns for her own safety, is not going to be able to hear shofar, there's legitimate room for her not to do so as a one-off, without making a tarat nedarim, without feeling she has to know vows, without there being any additional halachic requirement for her to fulfill. On the other hand, this year, there's an opportunity for women to hear it just as there is every year. And it's being taken as seriously by halachic authorities as it has been for over 1,000 years. And our challenge is to make the best of it and ensure that we can find a way that we can do it safely. Okay, I'm going to look at some questions now for those of you who want to stay and hear. And also, I'll first do the things that are in the chat, and then I'm going to, anyone who wants to open up their mute is welcome to do that. Okay, one question is, what other mitzvot can women obligate themselves to? It's a really interesting question. There's some classic examples. It's very common for women, not everyone, but it's very common for women to take lulav every day during Sukkot. And that is a mitzvah that we also see from very early on in medieval times that women have taken upon themselves. There are women who daven Maariv every night, and that can be understood. It can be understood as some poskim, like the Aruch HaShulchan, think it's fully obligatory. And some poskim, unlike in the Mishnah Berurah, think it's actually something that a woman can sort of opt into. So there's a range of situations where one can obligate herself. It's important to note that what it means to obligate oneself is not identical to being directly obligated on a Torah level. It's not the same thing. And at the same time, it can be treated, as we've seen in today's shir, with utmost seriousness. Where was this custom? So we discussed this. This really comes out most firmly starting from the Germanic, Franco-Germanic lands of Ashkenaz, and it spreads and eventually it becomes global, universal throughout the Jewish world for women to hear shofar. What happens if there's no male to blow a shofar, especially during these times of COVID? Well, I think what we've learned is women can learn to blow for herself. So if you don't think you're going to have a prospect of hearing shofar for a man or being able to hear a minyan, this is an opportunity for a woman to learn for herself. A question about women being a mohelet. I'm sorry, I'm not going to answer that now. It's actually a really complex discussion that's a little far afield from our topic. Yes, a woman can blow shofar for other women. There is the opinion that it's preferable to hear a man blowing shofar because maybe there's a special quality to the shofar blast being heard when it's sounded by someone who's obligated. But we saw a wide range, many, 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 a long list of Rishonim who say a woman can blow for herself and by the same token, she can blow for other women and make a bracha for them. Is a man already heard shofar and later will himself blow shofar for women allowed to recite the bracha? Will this be a bracha levatal because women are not obligated? So in this case, if a woman already heard shofar and he's later blowing it for women, ideally he should not be reciting the bracha and one of the women should be reciting the bracha unless there's another man present who hasn't heard shofar yet. So Ellen is asking, does this mean that anybody could blow shofar? According to the Rambam, who says the whole mitzvah is hearing and not blowing, at first glance, it sounds like it might be that way. And yet, then we saw, and Rav Frank expressed it very clearly, that there might be an idea that even if the mitzvah is really in the hearing, that what the thing you have to hear is a voice that's generated by someone who's ideally by someone who's obligated, or at least that's what a man would have to hear. So we're not going to, la halacha also, of course, we have the viewpoint of Rabbeinu Tam and of others that blowing is a part of the mitzvah. So we're not gonna let a monkey or a machine or blow our shofar, though it seems like an intriguing theoretical possibility. Do we have evidence in biblical times shofar was blown outside Jerusalem? Rosh Hashanah is not a pilgrim festival. Okay, so this is really it's a great question. The truth is, if I recall correctly, I think it's a Tosefta that actually talks about everybody taking turns of blowing shofar for themselves. So in fact, I think there were probably times and places where everyone for themselves would blow shofar. We've moved beyond that to really rely on a revut when it comes to shofar blowing. This year, for some reason, someone needs to share their shofar. They better be very, very, very careful about cleaning it first. It is not a simple matter in the time of Corona. Okay. Ellen notes that ein mochin is not necessarily an approbation. That's true. And at the same time, we have a lot more positive language and not just in mochin in a lot of contexts. So to be clear, about 1,000 years ago, women became obligated not on a Torah level to hear shofar. So before that, it's hard to know what was going on before that. Were women participating? Were they not participating? It's hard to know what was going on. Women were not considered obligated in any sense, but it doesn't mean that women were not participating. Okay. I've been told by Rav that 40 blasts are the minimum required. So it's interesting that there is an idea that a 40 blasts are the minimum required, but generally speaking, it's a more widespread ruling to say that 30 is the minimum. The safest would be an outdoor blowing with a mask on the shofar or listen through the show window. It sounds like that, unless we're going to talk, unless we're somehow able to manage this year sufficient distance that we would really be secure that the aerosols weren't spreading that far, which is hard because it's like an instrument for spreading them. And also hearing it really well. So there's really a difference of opinions. I think the idea of having the nylon, some kind of a nylon something in front, like not in front of the chauffeur, not in front of the blower, but like some kind of a partition that doesn't block sound, but just kind of blocks particles is probably a good idea. By the way, ordinarily we say, because we say that God is Oleh B'Kol Tru'ah, that the shofar should face up. This year, a lot of poskim have been saying it's okay to face the shofar downward to help minimize risk of transmission. Okay. Other than Rav Yitzchak Yosef, the other rabbis are Ashkenazim. The interesting thing from Rav Yosef is that Sfardim don't usually make bracha no mitzvah. Right. So many Sfardi women hear a shofar. It's very widespread throughout the Jewish world. The bracha on the shofar is something that Ashkenazim are going to do more. But hearing shofar is something that's very, very widespread. Okay. If anyone wants to unmute themselves or have another question.
I never received it.
Yes, I saw your request. I'm going to try emailing it to you again. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. Does anybody else have any thoughts? Anything to share? Okay, so on that note, I want to thank all of you for being here, for joining us for this shiur. Like I said, you can unmute yourself if there's something you want to say. I really think that this is an extremely, it's a pressing year. It's a year in which we might have had the inclination to say that as opposed to other years, this is a year, okay, women aren't obligated, Minatora. It's not such a big deal, but I think when we really look at the sources and the history of working with the mitzvah of shofar and what it's meant to women, it becomes a lot harder to say that unless we're talking about a case where it's really, really going to present a health hazard and we can't take appropriate precautions. A woman who doesn't feel safe certainly has what to rely on, but there is a very strong halachic history to say, let's do everything possible to make sure that women can be part of this because the shofar, in a sense, is expressing prayers for all of us. Thank you very much to all of you who joined us. Shana Tova, Ktiva V'Chatima Tova. We should have a very healthy and beautiful year of unity and Torah and growth. Shana Tova.